LAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Dave Packer. President Trump addressing his supporters on social media following the shooting death of conservative activist Charlie Kirk.
To my great fellow Americans, I am filled with grief and anger at the heinous assassination of Charlie Kirk on a college campus in Utah.
The president fixing the blame for the horrific shooting on his political opponents.
Radical left political violence has hurt too many innocent people and taken too many lives.
This as
Kamala Harris, who faced off with President Trump in a race where Charlie Kirk played a pivotal role, saying, quote, "Let me be clear, political violence has no place in America," adding, "We all must work together to ensure this does not lead to more violence."
ABC's Mary Bruce. And tonight in Orem, Utah, a vigil for Kirk near the university campus where Kirk was shot. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Brewers lose in Texas. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers lost to the Texas Rangers today, 6-3. The Rangers completing a sweep of the crew. The last time the Brewers were swept in a three-game series was opening weekend in March in New York against the Yankees. The Brewers had 11 hits but could only manage to score three runs. They have tomorrow off and host the Cardinals Friday night. NFL. Packers making an interesting move, signing wide receiver Christian Watson to a one-year contract extension worth over $13 million. Watson rehabbing that torn ACL he suffered January 5th against the Bears.
I mean, I don't have a timeline as of right now. I mean, I'm just trying to, you know, get back to feeling 100%, doing, you know, everything I need to do out there, and I'll kind of just let the trainers and everything, you know, let me out. I mean, it's been feeling really good so far. I haven't, you know, had anything, you know, to deal with so far. It's all just been, you know, feeling really good. I'm able to keep on going out there and attacking my rehab, and oh yeah, it's been going real good.
That's the Packers' Christian Watson with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Timeout.
Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. I got to be honest, something I thought I would never say, but kind of have to in this moment. Good on Marjorie Taylor Greene. Good on Marjorie Three Names. Took a picture of the Trump birthday letter to Jeffrey Epstein. Put it on the wall with his signatures and. At first, thought it was AI. Thought, no, there's just no way. Yeah, you know, and good on her. You know, good on her for being the one to, you know, to stand up and, oh, I don't know, defend women. I mean, it's very odd. It's, you know, it is what it is, and here we are. Now, Trump did exactly what Trump does and does very well. It's all a hoax. It's a hoax. It never happened. It's because again, what Trump really understands, and most politicians get, you know, it goes back to the LBJ days, you know, when he said I wanted to, you know, accuse an opponent of having sex with a bull just so I could hear them deny it. This is one of those moments where if you're explaining, you're losing, and he knows it, so it's just all a hoax. Everything is a hoax. Nothing's true. It's all made up. It's all Joe Biden. It's all Barack Obama. And look, everybody knows. And this is the weird part. This isn't over. And the more they drip and drab this stuff out, the more we get a letter here, something there. the more people, even the Marjorie Taylor Greens, are going to, well, push back. And I got to wonder, how many MAGA, QAnon, you know, everybody, got to wonder how many of them are feeling the same way. Because the story's not over. And as I said, you were going to see more coming out. But it's interesting to watch the Republicans fall into line, because this is one of those loyalty tests. Either you fall into line. I mean, Mike Johnson, supposedly a man of the faith, saying that Trump was an FBI informant floating that lead balloon. Yeah, this is what that's going to be. This is going to be that. It's going to be that litmus test for your loyalty. Do you think it's a hoax? And look, we've seen Trump do this before. You know, all the Russia evidence, it was all a hoax. And even still, he's done such a great job that you ask any card-carrying Republican, they're going to tell you, Russia was all a hoax. Never mind all of the evidence in the Mueller report. Never mind all of the, I'm not going to say coordination. I'm going to say friendships. Because understand, a lot of those people have had ties to Russian oligarchs for decades. They're buddies. They're in the same club. So it's natural that they would be meeting and colluding and coordinating. But here's the weird thing. You dismiss the entire investigation as a hoax. Now, you got to wonder how much of MAGA land, who's been just fixated on this for years, how many of them are going to buy it? That's the true test of the Kool-Aid. It really is. If you're buying that it's all a hoax now, after you know wanting Bill Clinton's head, yeah, it's going to be very interesting. Now, this is good timing for him because the economy's tanking. It hasn't done anything in Russia, and Ukraine hasn't done anything in Gaza or Palestine. Hasn't brought the cost of anything down. And now here we are with a government shutdown on the horizon. Because what is there? It's like 9-10 legislative days left. We're like 20 days to the end of the month. And I've gotten a number of emails going, well, how come you even talked about a shutdown? And I'm like, yeah, I got to be honest. I don't know that one's going to happen. I think Democrats will walk back. And understand, there are arguments on both sides. There's the angry, visceral part of me that says, shut it all down. I'm with Robert Reich. Shut it down. These aren't normal times. These aren't normal people. Normally in a shutdown, people are harmed. Government who does things for people, that stops. They're breaking all of that anyway. They are, as we speak, breaking our government even further. So shutting it down may end up saving some of the harm that's coming. But the other side of it is, look, you know, Democrats have got a real shot of most certainly taking the House. It doesn't take a genius to figure out they're going to take the House. Whether they get the Senate in what is a fairly rough year, that's the true test. Now, there's also the part of me that goes, no, you know what? Republicans control the House, the Senate, and the White House, and the Supreme Court, and much of our judicial system. Go ahead. Do what you got to do. You're not getting any help from us, but you do what you got to do. Now, what could happen is Republicans would then do away with the filibuster, which, I'll be honest, I'm not a huge filibuster fan. Too much progress has been stopped because of it. So, yeah, this is where we are. I think Democrats have a real shot in the midterms. A shutdown, I think, would hamper some of that. So you got to pick your poison. Again, the visceral part of me, the angry part of me, though, let's fight, shut it down. The cerebral part going, hold on, we're going to play chess. We're going to figure it out. And for me in this moment, it's the visceral part that's winning. Because I do believe we need to at least pretend like there's a fight going on. And also the big news that came out, the U.S. economy, evidently, according to ABC News, added fewer, 911,000 fewer jobs from March of 2024 to March of 2025. That is the largest ever revision. And I had a number of conversations with people going, is this Trump, rigging the data? Is this Trump, putting his loyalty, his lackeys in? And I'm like, no, this is normal kind of revision. When they get new information, they're always revising. They're always predicting. It's not an absolute, but to have this massive amount, it was interesting to see. On the right, it's all, Joe Biden rigged the economy, and on the left, Donald Trump rigged the numbers. That's why we have to keep independent agencies. That's why we have to keep independent sources to give us information the best that they can. And what's frightening to me is, as we attack these numbers, and as we go after what are, the only real resources we have, what happens when you don't trust those anymore? What happens when we don't have any mutually agreed upon kind of facts or resources? And that reality just swings with whomever is sitting in the White House. That's a concern. So when I saw this, I got to be honest, my mind went to, before I started delving into it, when I just read the headline, my mind was, well, they fired the BLS woman, last month, because of the horrible jobs number. They just got another really bad jobs number, 22,000 for last month. This has to be a Trumpy appointment, a patronage hire, revising this so that next month will look better. And it's not. These are bureaucrats. These are the people who they spend their life. And this is a normal revision. It's a big one, but it's a normal revision, and it's not something that Biden did or Trump did. And I'll be honest with you, that's what I want from our government, which is why the assault on that is kind of the scariest part of this, because now you're making everything swing with the political winds. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Sarah Estep from the Center for American Progress about these numbers, what it means, and, how the economy's doing in your neck of the woods. How's it going? Prices coming down? That gas, a buck a gallon? Eggs? I want to hear it. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back with Sarah Estep.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, I go back to these job numbers and all the information around it and the narrative that I keep seeing from people reaching out going, see, Biden did rig the economy. Look at the numbers. And it's one of those things where, Trump's spinning an interesting tale. There was 22,000 jobs of this was it Friday, 73,000 got somebody fired, and now massive revision saying, hey, the economy was softer. Makes you kind of wonder. And here to explain some of it, walk us through the all the numbers, all of the minutia. I've asked Sarah Estep to come share some thoughts. She's an economist there at the Center for American Progress. AmericanProgress.org, the website, if you want to check out the work that they do there. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
So walk me some of these numbers. We saw 73,000 got somebody fired last month. We saw 22,000. Now we see this revision of the economy added 911,000 fewer jobs than previously known. It's a lot of numbers. It's a lot of, it sounds like a lot of bad. Help walk me through some of this.
Yeah, sure. So we saw really, really slow jobs growth on Friday. It was only 22,000 jobs added, and June actually went negative, which is pretty shocking. And then today we had a large benchmark revision that the BLS does every year, where the backwards looking data from April through March of 2025 went negative again. It was it was revised downward. So that means there were 911,000 fewer jobs added over that period. And the Trump administration is now using that to justify some of the horrendous things they've done at the BLS. And they're using that to justify rate cuts. They're using the news in all kinds of ways.
No, and this is where, look, I've gotten a lot of responses from people going, the job numbers are horrible and it's all Joe Biden's fault, which plays back into the original frame that Trump started at the beginning of the year, that anything he does is good. Anything that is bad news is because of Biden. So this kind of plays into that. Or do you see it differently?
I see it a bit differently. So obviously the revision only goes through March. And then Trump obviously used his tariffs starting in around April, and they've been changing by the day since then. He also, he went back on some of the investments that Biden had originally planned, especially for industries like manufacturing. So a lot of green energy manufacturing jobs that we were anticipating are no more. We're seeing this slowdown partially because of aging and immigration as well. Those policies that Trump has also implemented in terms of immigration are slowing growth. And so in general, the economy has been slowing. That's correct. But I think Trump's actions are worsening that slowdown.
No, absolutely. But, the thing is this is March of 24 to March of 25. Liberation Day didn't happen until April, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Are we to expect much worse? Because I think this is kind of the canary in the coal mine. Of, the economy's not doing great. And, oh, by the way, everything that Trump has done since, quote unquote, Liberation Day has only exacerbated, and it's only going to get worse the further we go into the year. Or, again, are you seeing something different as an economist?
I mean, I'm anticipating a further slowdown, especially the immigration piece is something a lot of folks have been talking about because it really does slow the pace of growth. And so adding fewer jobs is something we should expect. However, this was way below expectations. They were expecting something like 75,000 jobs on Friday, and we only added 22,000. So it's not looking great. And whenever it comes to the sectoral aspect of it, it's really only health and education services that are adding jobs at this point. They're pretty much propping up the whole economy. And so I don't know that cutting Medicaid and cutting the subsidies for the premium tax credits are going to help that industry grow. So, yeah, I think he's, adding fuel to the fire. So
it's a lot of bad. Because you brought up the fact that they're pulling back on investments that were made during the Biden year. So things that would have created more jobs, the Revolution Wind Project, there off the coast of Rhode Island, where, I keep asking my Keystone XL lover friends why they aren't on the same kind of fervor over the Revolution Wind Project, because that was thousands of jobs and it's 80% done. Whereas Keystone XL was like 200 jobs, not important jobs, yes, but I don't see the same kind of anger and outrage. And every time you talk about a presidential decision, it comes up. It seems weird to me.
Yeah, I think we need to be talking more about how this is actually going to affect people. I went to school in Rhode Island. I know people who are excited about those potential jobs, and now we're seeing all of these things get pulled back. And so, like, whenever I looked at the data from April in the manufacturing sector, for example, I saw that employment in that industry had declined by 42,000 jobs. And, you know, that's pretty, I think we can pretty much attribute most of that to the tariffs.
Hold on. Whoa. Back up. Whoa. Rewind. 42,000 jobs lost?
Yeah. In the manufacturing sector since April. We use the tariff announcements as our base. So that's a pretty huge loss.
That is enormous. How many months does it take to create? Because most months you create, you know, 6,000-7,000. That's multiple months and lost in 1 month.
Yeah, that it's pretty terrible. And I think, you know, we're seeing the slowdown across the board, obviously, but I wanted to call out manufacturing in particular, because I think the tariffs have been especially harmful to the manufacturing sector. Whenever we look at surveys of manufacturers, they say that the tariffs specifically are increasing their input costs. They're making it more difficult for them to determine what consumer demand is going to look like. They're just finding that the tariffs are across the board really harming them, and they're trying to, you know, not do layoffs, but they're kind of hitting a point where they're staring down the barrel of that.
But what do you say to the person? And look, I'm not an anti-tariff person. I have said this a million times. If used as part of an overall strategy, strategically, not as a blunt object, I think they can be helpful in holding on to industries that we need. Yes, they're going to raise costs a little bit, but I think we can deal with that in industries that we need for vital things like national security, like national health, you know, national infrastructure. I think there are reasons you do this, but this kind of broad spread, wide across the globe kind of tariff, I it seems like disruption for just the sake of disruption.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen targeted tariffs used as one of the tools in our toolkit, right? And this is not that. These are across the board tariffs that are making it really hard for businesses to operate, especially smaller businesses. They're going to put price pressures on consumers who are already feeling a lot of price pressures even before the tariffs. So, you know, it's a real problem, and it's only going to make things worse.
Yeah. So when do you think we start seeing this? Because look, I get a lot of response from people going, well, you keep saying the sky is falling, prices are going to continue to go skyrocketing and all of this. You know, when does this, you know, when does the, you know, the shoe fall? When do we start seeing it, or are we seeing it?
I mean, we are seeing price increases. Some of the businesses managed to build up their inventories prior to the tariffs, right? Or as they were being announced. And so we're kind of going to see like a lagging effect of that, right? So, and then a lot of contracts were already in place before the tariffs were announced. So those are baked in, right? So I would say we'll see the impact of the tariffs more clearly in the coming months. But we're already kind of starting to see that, and that's being disclosed in the manufacturing surveys. They're trying to avoid passing the prices on to their consumer, but they're hitting a point where they really can't. And that's really difficult for people who need to buy things.
No, but I want to go back to the beginning, because, you know, where we started, which was the numbers and the news that we keep seeing, because immediately I got one side saying, see, Biden screwed up the economy. And on the other side, you know, it was, you know, Trump's rewriting history and, you know, doing this massive reduction so that, you know, anything going forward makes him look better. So either way, it's the independence of these agencies that are taking kind of a hit. And it seems to me that this is exactly what Trump would want, because the assault really has been on any independent oversight or any organizations like the BLS.
Yeah, I mean, they are going to play a very dangerous game with the BLS right now. They have nominated someone who is completely unqualified to run the agency. We are you know, looking at an agency that has already been understaffed, about a third of their senior staff are not there at the moment. And then they've had all of these reductions to their budget that make it more difficult for them to do their jobs. Survey response rates have been falling. And so all of this together makes it really difficult for long-term career employees to do their jobs. And all of these employees at the BLS, there's only one political appointee at this agency, and it is the commissioner. Right now, it is entirely being run by apolitical career employees. They just want to put out the right numbers. These are the real data nerds, and their job is becoming more and more difficult and more politicized. And whenever we've seen that in other countries like Argentina, like Greece, we see really bad outcomes for the economy.
Well, because for me, it's frightening to think that there are going to be no agreed upon trusted resources or facts, that there are no actual facts, that it's going to be just reality is going to swing with whomever is sitting in the Oval Office or whoever appoints whoever's sitting in those chairs. That's kind of frightening, because at least in the past we had an agreed upon set of resources. May not have liked which way they did things, but at least you kind of agreed on it. I fear the world where we were making patronage great again.
I do too. I worry about what will happen to the agency going forward. I think now is the time to advocate for the agency, for the independence of the agency, to make sure we aren't seeing Trump cook the books, to make sure that businesses and the Federal Reserve and individuals can make the best choices possible, to make sure that interest rates are set appropriately, to make sure that COLAs on Social Security income are correct. These are all just a few of the things that this data influences. So
let me ask you about that, really, because yesterday we talked about the Social Security COLA. In fact, the Motley Fool story that I referenced called it the Trump bump, which you go, no, it's the normal course of business. Social Security does this from Nixon till today. Why we're calling it the Trump bump, I'm not sure. But let me ask you, is it a fair analysis to say this is whatever comes is because of Trump and his policies?
We'll see. I think his policies are not going to give us a bump going forward, a positive bump going forward. I think the COLA question is interesting. I think the inflation problem is really serious, and I think if he does these things that make it more difficult to identify how prices are moving in the economy by corrupting the BLS and other agencies, it's going to make it really difficult to understand where we're at and make COLA adjustments accordingly. And so that's a real concern. It can mean we're increasing government expenditures unnecessarily, or it can mean people don't have the money in their pockets that they need. Either estimating too high or too low is bad.
So let me ask you, I got two more real quick questions. One, is there anything that this administration is doing that is moving us economically in the right direction? I mean, I'm told the tax cuts are supposed to help, but they've never really helped in the past. I'm told more deregulation is what we need, but every time we do that, it never really seems, at least the gains and the positives never trickle down to the working class. So is there anything you see you go, yeah, that's not bad?
So not particularly. The tax cuts that you mentioned that people might think are somehow going to positively affect them, there's been some distributional analysis of those. They're primarily going to the ultra wealthy. It is one of the biggest, it's taking from the poor and giving to the rich. Truly, they are not going to go to everyday workers. They're not going to go to the working class. They are going to rich people.
Clearly Robin Hood in reverse. So last question I've got for you. You know, the reality is, as we're looking at these numbers, as we're looking at these agencies, I just want you to ball it up in just real quick. And And what do we take from the information that we saw, the revision? How are you looking at that? And is there any conspiracy here to be delving into?
I don't think there's conspiracy per se. I worry about the fact that I think we're in a turning point in our economy. These revisions have been large because we're at a place of change, and I am a little bit concerned that we're turning in the wrong direction.
Yeah, we are most certainly turning in that wrong direction. Sarah, I appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks so much. I wish there was better news, better things to talk about. I wish we were talking about a growing economy, a booming economy. Well, not so much. But Sarah Estep, I appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Are you looking at these numbers and a little concerned like I am? I want to hear it. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, a low in the mid-50s with patchy fog tomorrow morning, and turning mostly sunny, warm for tomorrow afternoon, high in the mid-70s. 80s for the rest of the week and weekend. Next chance of showers and thunderstorms Sunday night into Monday. It's 60 right now.
This is Robert Pilot, host of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we talk about Native issues like treaties, protecting Mother Earth, and holding our elected officials accountable. You'll also hear from Turtle Island voices like Arvina Martin, State Representative Heather Keeler, Ruth Anna Buffalo, Dr. Anthony Stately, State Senator Mary Kunish, Robert Lilligren, and Bob Blake. Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Operation Midway Blitz hath begun. We've got the ICE folks in there snatching folks up. And some of the responses have been pretty interesting. You got Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, said we're going to go to where the biggest problems are. And the biggest problems are sanctuary cities. You had the White House spokeswoman, this Carolyn Leavitt, her saying that we're picking up bad guys in Washington, D.C. every day. And the president would love to do that in every Democrat-run city across the country. So what do we got here? We got Chicago is the enemy of Democratic cities. They're the enemy. Somehow Tom Hanks is a destructive force. The Epstein thing's a hoax. And domestic violence, a-okay. Orwell, seriously, Orwell, spinning in the grave. And here to share some thoughts on, well, just what is going on. I've asked Jill Manrique to come share some thoughts. She's the executive director of Jobs, Chicago's Jobs with Justice. You can find out their work at chicagojwj.org. Jill, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Ray.
So, Chicago's a hellscape, a burning dumpster fire of crime and misery, and the president has to come in and clean the mess up because, well, the Democrat-run city, it's bad, Jill. It's bad.
So I hear. But I was born and raised here, and I'm not seeing that. So I don't know what he's talking about.
So what are you seeing? Because look, we're getting a lot of stories from all over the right wing media how they're going in and getting the worst of the worst. They're going after gang members. The worst of the worst. And look, nobody's against getting criminals. No one's against going after and catching people who've broken the law. But really, are they?
No. one of my first issues here is, we're talking about, or he's talking about going after folks who are lazy, going after folks who are criminals, going after folks who, quote unquote, shouldn't be here. If you're trying to go after folks who are being a drain on our economy. Why are you going to workplaces? Like, that's my first question.
Because that's where they are, Jill.
It's absolutely ridiculous. What we're seeing in Chicago is an attack on working people, like plain and simple, good working folks. And these are targeted attacks. Since January, we've been seeing ICE agents at the courthouses. And these are folks that are just trying to go to their appointments, folks that are trying to follow the law, folks that are trying to go about their citizenship the way that you're quote unquote supposed to.
The right way.
Exactly. And so we've been seeing them at the courthouses snatching folks up. And now what we're seeing is ICE targeted attacks, not only at the courthouses, but in immigrant communities and at immigrant work sites.
But they're criminals, Jill. We got to go get the criminals. And because your criminals are at courthouses, right? You know, because look, this is the weird part, because they say they're going after the criminals, the worst of the worst. I don't know about you, but I don't know very many criminals who show up to a job or show up to court dates, especially if they're here, doing really bad things. And it seems like their messaging and what they're actually doing are two very, very different things.
Absolutely. And the folks that they're sending, this new breed of ICE agents, I'm going to be honest with you, they're disgusting.
Have you seen the videos, or have you seen in person?
Yes.
These kind of, yesterday we had someone who said that these people were being seized. I'm going, seized is a very strange word for kidnapped.
Yeah. I mean, kidnapping is the word. That is definitely the word. And there's a feeling around these people that they like what they're doing. They have to know what they're doing. They've been hired to do this job. They are in the communities. They're taking people. They're kidnapping them. And you can feel sometimes the joy off of those ICE officers from taking people away from their families. And it's gross. Absolutely disgusting.
Well, let's dig into that for a minute, because, I find it really very difficult to, if that were my career, I think I would be looking for another one. Like,
absolutely.
I understand that you're enforcing you get into a job because you want to enforce the laws of the country. You want to do the fight the good fight, so to speak. But when you're literally ripping, people apart, when you're grabbing people off the street and you have to wear a mask to do it, I don't know that you're fighting the good fight. I don't know that you're on the right side of history or justice or morality or really anything.
No, I don't think so. I really don't think so. And let's be real. They're going into Chicago. Chicago is a union town. Chicago has plenty of opportunities for good, like strong jobs. There's plenty of other things that you could do that don't involve ripping people away from their families and that don't involve destroying people's lives. And the reality is, too, that these folks know exactly where they're taking people. I mean, they take them into ICE custody, and then we know exactly where they go after that. We don't have ICE detention centers in Illinois. So where are they going to get sent to? They're going to get sent to ICE detention centers across the country. And that's deportation right there. That's something that Black folks across the country have felt forever. I mean, you take someone and you remove them from where they've always known and take them somewhere else where they don't have people to stand up for them.
Well, what do you say to the argument, Jill? And I get this from a lot of my red hat friends. They're not supposed to be here. They came here illegally. They should have done it the right way, whatever that is in this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to that argument that, by being here in an undocumented fashion, that they are breaking the law and that they should be moved along?
I would say that our immigration system, our immigration policies are so incredibly broken. And the way that folks get here and the reason that some folks are here based on asylum is entirely the fault of the United States. And I think that there is absolutely some like real cognitive dissonance from folks that don't see that. I mean, when we had busloads of folks from Venezuela coming into Chicago a couple summers ago, It's not as if they were coming here for fun. They were coming here escaping something.
Right.
And then they were sent here by that governor in Texas. And they were asylees. And there was a reason for that. And it's the same thing all through Central America and through South America. There are interventions that the U.S. has done that has forced folks to come here. And then that's not even talking about climate migration, too. So no, let's fix our systems.
No,
let's
absolutely.
Fix our policies.
And this is, again, a failure of Congress. Not just this one, not this the last one, not the one before that, but the one before that.
Exactly.
This is decades of failed failures by Congress after Congress to not do anything. And look, when there was a chance, Trump stepped in and stopped any chance of immigration reform this last time around. So I think we're here because, well, there's some people who want it because they want the issue more than a solution to a problem, because we do need people to come here. We do need to continue to have population growth, because as we get older and you know, people here are having less kids, we need more young people. We need more people to come do jobs if our economy is going to stand up. And to be honest, quite frankly, and I say this to every one of my friends who takes a hardline stand against immigration, I'm like, if I'm on the southern part of the border looking across and my kids are hungry, there is nothing going to stop me from being here to support my kids, especially given the fact that this administration and Republicans for decades have cut and defunded all foreign aid programs, and Trump just completely wiped it away. So what are people left in a lot of these places to do? And I know the response is, don't care.
Well, let's just be hopeful for a second and real. This country could be a wonderful place. I mean, there are moments that we see all over. We see it in Chicago right now. There are folks that are marching every single day downtown and all over Chicago metro area, just screaming for the rights of community members that they'll never meet, that they've never known. Chicago is a city of neighborhoods, and every neighborhood is different. And that means culturally and in every single sort of way. It's a beautiful thing. And all of our industries are dependent on all of these different cultures and all of these different people. And that's true across the entire United States. So to say that we don't want people is it's like counterintuitive. It's counter to who we should be and who we should hope to be as a country. This country is beautiful because of who's here and who's come here. And if we're just specifically looking at the labor movement, it needs some help. We need folks in it. We need unionized labor. We need these folks who have come here searching for jobs, searching for stability, searching for the American dream. We need them to be a part of the labor movement, to be a part of unionized labor. And it's a win-win for both. So I can't pretend to understand why people don't want immigrants here, besides this false narrative of scarcity that we know doesn't actually exist.
The working class of this country has been divided and pitted against each other for decades, actually from the beginning of time. I mean, 100 years ago, Jay Gould was attributed the quote of, "I could pay half the working class to murder the other half." We're doing that now without actually them having to pay, it seems. But we've been always told that it's the guy behind us who's our biggest problem, when the reality is if we really wanted to solve these problems, go after some of those white guys wearing the white shirts and the ties sitting in the C-suites. Let's go after them and start dealing with that.
Exactly. That's the one we need to go after. It's the corporate greed. They're the ones. And if we could all see it, if we could all unify, if we could all work together, that would just terrify them, because we would win.
So now I'm seeing all these images. I saw some really great images of city trucks lining streets, which I thought was great. And I know you've been to some of these protests. What's the sense of of the average person? Because as you said, look, there are people who don't even know immigrants who are out there fighting. And I would argue part of that is radical self-interest, because once they're done going after the immigrants, well, how many generations back of immigrants do we start looking to? Because they've already said they want to send some back. How many generations do you have to be here before you're safe? So I'm curious, what's the vibe that you're getting on the street from people? Do they realize that this is, one, it's history, but two, that you're fighting the first battle in what could be something that sweeps across this country?
You know, Chicago mobilized right away. In January, when we saw these attacks coming, we mobilized immediately within our neighborhoods and within our community organizations and within our labor unions to get out in the streets and in our communities and do Know Your Rights trainings everywhere. So much so that even Tom Homan said that Chicagoans are too trained on their rights. He said that it was an impediment to their work. So good for us.
Knowing your rights, and remember, these are, see that now you gotta couch this in the right term then, because you know these are the people who walked around with the pocket constitutions. These are the folks who are who are telling us how much they love the Constitution,
exactly.
Saying that knowing your rights is an impediment. Wait a minute,
right? So we know the playbook here. Like we know how to teach people what their rights are. We know how to knock on doors. Nobody does that like Chicago does. We knock on all the doors. We talk to our community members. We talk to our rank and file. We talk to everybody and anybody that will listen. We grab megaphones and we'll just scream it on the corners when we have to. But now we are doing trainings on ice watching. So people know, they know what to look for. They know who to look for. And they also know who to call to verify that what they think they saw is what they saw. And so that we can let folks know in the communities that this is a verified sighting. And so we're not causing panic everywhere. So people are hungry to get informed, so much so that last Friday, I held an emergency ice watch training. And I thought, oh, it was going to be 15, 20 people. There were almost 200 people signed up. I was prepared for it, but, you know, happily shocked. And that's the type of solidarity we're seeing. I mean, Labor Day here in Chicago has never looked like this. Not as long as I've seen it. I mean, it had to be tens of thousands of people in the streets on Labor Day. And it wasn't just the public unions. It was the public unions. It was the community organizations. It was the trades unions. And that was so beautiful to see. It was the faith communities. It was everybody out in the streets on Labor Day fighting for and being so loud about how important it is to be in solidarity and be unified to fight this authoritarianism.
No, and look, I said on election day, you know, I said what will come is, you know, the solutions to our problems will come out of the suffering caused by their savagery. Correct. All of the things that they are going to do that are going to cause people pain across this country will give folks like you and other organizations an opportunity to organize that anger and to direct it in a positive way, as opposed to what the Tea Party groups and the 9/12 groups and the Americans for Prosperity, AstroTurf groups have done. I think we can use this anger to make a country that we want, a country worth inheriting for our children.
We have an obligation to do that. I mean, this is a horrible moment, but it's also such a huge opportunity. We have this opportunity to grow together and to, like you said, build the future that we all deserve, that not just our kids and our grandkids deserve, but that we deserve. We need to build it for right now. I mean, one of the most beautiful things that I'm seeing coming out of this too is bargaining for the common good. If you look at the contract that the Chicago Teachers Union put together and the contract that the Mauser Teamsters are trying to put together, like, that's not just a contract for working folks on the job. Those are contracts for working folks to live their lives. And that's what we can all be doing, and not just unionized workers. Those are things that we could be doing in our communities with community benefits agreements and just in general. Like, yep. we could be utilizing this moment, and we should be, and we will be.
No, look, in talking to a lot of my labor friends, they get it, especially the ones who understand labor history. They get when the National Guard gets called out, it's usually to break up strikes. It's usually to break up people organizing for better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities, all that. Last question I've got for you, because, are you sure the city is not a burning hellscape of dumpster fire misery?
Listen, this is not a new narrative. You know about Fort Sheridan? So Fort Sheridan is a fort that was built in the 1800s, just north of Chicago. And it was built by the federal government to put down the labor issues that were going on, like Haymarket.
Right.
Well, now Fort Sheridan is just luxury condos and luxury homes. Like, that didn't work. Chicago happens to be a labor town. In Chicago, there is nobody prouder of where they're from than Chicagoans. We are working on our solidarity, and we're working on it every damn day. Sorry. We're working on our solidarity every day. We're working on it in the streets. We're working on it in our contracts. We're working it on our signal chats. We are out there protecting each other, and we're going to keep doing that. And everything that Trump and his cronies are trying to throw at us is going to fail, and they're going to look dumb, and that sucks for them.
There you go. Jill, I appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks so much. I look forward to hearing more about you guys standing up and fighting back. Thanks for the time.
Thank you for having me.
Jill Manrique, Executive Director of Chicago's Jobs with Justice. You can check out their website, chicagojwj.org. Want to hear your thoughts. If you're from Chicago, is she right? Is it really a nice place? I've been there a lot. I like it. Want to hear your thoughts. Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1859. That was the day that the St. Anthony and Minneapolis Typographical Union No. 42 was founded in Minnesota. It was one of the oldest unions on record in the state. 3 years earlier, printers in St. Paul had formed a union, Local 30, with a dinner to honor Benjamin Franklin's birthday. At the time, just over 6,000 white people lived in the state of Minnesota. Typographical workers were very important to the early labor movement in the United States. These printers were vital to spreading the word about the cause of labor to other workers in the era before radio, television, or computers. In Minnesota, 8 journeyman printers joined together to form Local 42. According to the History of Hennepin County and the City of Minneapolis, published in 1881, quote, the union was prosperous, having at one time on its list every journeyman printer within its jurisdiction. The War of the Rebellion practically dissolved the organization, 5 of its members entering the Union Army. Like it did for many fledgling unions, the Civil War took its toll on the Typographical Union Local 42 membership. One member, H.M. Metcalf, was killed in battle. The union was disbanded during the Civil War, reforming a decade later. Although the Civil War had disrupted labor organizing across the North, the years following the conflict saw a surge in labor activity. Wages stagnated during the war, while prices for goods continued to soar. Workers banded together for fair pay and against the exploitation that grew along with increasing industrialization. These early labor unions were prominently made up of skilled workers like these printers.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know, good on people like Jill who are standing up and organizing in this moment. And like I said, look, the more they do, the more they overreach, the crazier that they get, the harsher they get, the more they hide behind masks. Remember, these are the people who are anti-masks. it's quite remarkable. And remember, these are the people who also said that they believe in states' rights and local control and fear of a big, powerful federal government. And yet here they are, basically anointing a king, pushing this idea of the unitary executive, and a Supreme Court that's going, eh, okay. You know, if it was a Democrat, you know, if a Democrat was doing this stuff, because look, when you talk to conservatives, they truly believe Barack Obama did all of this stuff. And I'm like, tell me when Obama sent the National Guard into a Republican city, a Republican-led city, and then had a communications person go, we want to go into every Republican city. Really? But I'll guarantee you'll find some of our Red Hat Brigade going, yeah, they did. I was there. I know a guy. No. Remember, these are also the people who said that, and I still know people who carry their pocket constitution around. There were a number of right-wing groups, Tea Party groups, who were, we got to know our rights. And the interesting thing, and I find it interesting that Jill points out that Tom Homan credits the organizations in Chicago for training people to know what their rights actually are. Because I know a lot of my Red Hat friends who evidently they've got rights that I've never heard of. They believe they got a right against everything. And yet not, they got the book. Now, granted, it's never been really cracked open. I think they believe that it'll just bleed into them. But here's the sad reality. They've been told for so long that Chicago or any major city in this country is a burning hellhole. You know, it's all crime and it's all illegals and it's all, you know, immoral. And the reality is, you know, you go to anywhere where poverty is high, you're going to have problems. Rural America, urban America, it doesn't matter. Where there's poverty, there are problems. Where people feel desperate, desperate people do desperate things. What Trump is doing isn't helping any of that. And the economy, which, you know, as we've been talking about, is heading straight down the drain. That's not going to make things any better. This kind of heavy-handedness, not going to make things better, but it's not supposed to. It's supposed to keep us divided. It's supposed to keep us distracted from the reality that they are destroying our government. They are privatizing Medicare. They're destroying Medicare and Social Security. They're privatizing Social Security. They're going after all of these things. That's the goal. All while telling us with a straight face, no, we wouldn't do such a thing. This is all a massive distraction and diversion. And also, look, it really is about the misery. The chaos is the point. So that you're not paying attention to the fact that they're not making your life better. None of this is going to be helpful to help you put food on the table. Breakfast isn't going to get cheaper. And in fact, the Wall Street Journal just reported that inflation, again, when Trump took office, that was all supposed to go away. Inflation has eaten into America's wage gains. Virtually every household in this country has seen little change, and most families have actually fallen back. Only the richest households have actually done better. The majority of households in this country haven't gained any ground economically since the pandemic hit. Prices keep going up. Inflation-adjusted medium household income was at about the same level it was in 2019, before the pandemic hit, and we saw massive, massive inflation. What are they doing about that? Nothing. It is about the distraction. It is about, well, it's a version of wag the dog. As long as we keep paying attention to the crimes that they're committing on the street going after poor people, we're not really questioning how they're not helping us. Because I'm still waiting. Can someone please let me know what they think Trump is doing to help working people and their families? I want to know. And don't tell me the tax bill, because nope, not it. But I want to hear your thoughts, because there's a lot of rhetoric out there. There's a lot of hot air. There's a lot of Trumpisms. Greatest ever. Best ever. Smartest ever. The reality is most people I know, they're struggling. Most people I know, when they go to the store, and their pockets are a lot lighter when they got home. Their standard of living is falling, and it's getting harder. And the real problems that are coming down the road, nobody is dealing with. When AI takes over in the next month, year, Nobody's moving us in that direction. Want to hear your thoughts, though? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Dave Packer. A manhunt tonight for the person who shot and killed Charlie Kirk during an on-campus student-sponsored event at Utah Valley University. The investigation already has had some twists and turns.
In the moments after the shooting, there was an elderly man who was in the crowd that was briefly detained. Law enforcement later pointing out that this person did not appear to be tied to the shooting. Next, they announced at a press conference at 6:30 Eastern, roughly, that a person of interest was in custody that they were interviewing, and it was based in part on surveillance footage that had been recovered, in which someone in black, dressed in black, was seen acting suspiciously.
ABC News Chief Justice Correspondent Pierre Thomas. In Washington, House Speaker Mike Johnson's office says flags at the Capitol are at half staff in honor of Charlie Kirk. This is ABC News. New Orleans.